time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is one of your hosts, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with Don Wyatt.
Glad to be here, as always.
Good to see you, Don.
It's always good to be here.
My dad always says it's good to be seen.
Good to be seen. There you
Beats
go.
Beats the alternative. We are broadcasting from Oklahoma, the great state of Oklahoma, and it's still raining here, which is a good thing. We've been coming out of a two-year drought, so this is good.
I think we're about caught up, though, aren't we?
We are caught up. We're both.
Every time it clouds over, I get a flash flood alert on my phone.
So. I was watching the news last night, and they're profiling or are highlighting one of the lawn mowing companies in the state, a pretty popular one, and they said, we've gone from 100 jobs a week mowing jobs a week, typically for this company, in August to 300. Mm. The grass is growing so fast.
I do know they're having to resort to mowing on Sundays, which they never used to do, because they just can't keep up or they're getting rained out on their normal mow days and that sort of thing.
Is that in your neighborhood?
In my neighborhood,
in your
yeah.
neighborhood. Well, it's a good thing.
I guess.
We haven't got
know.
Anything to complain about. Well, we're broadcasting from Oklahoma, as I said. The website for OK Safe is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. Our other website is exposinghealthcarereform.com, exposinghealthcarereform.com, which is pretty self-explanatory. It is about the truth about what healthcare reform in this country is really about.
It's an excellent and very, very information-rich website. A lot of good information there.
It is, and it's still under, there are things that are being added all the time, so
always
you want to check back,
be, yeah.
check back frequently. The other website is Stop Smart Meters in Oklahoma, Stop Smart Meters in Oklahoma, and by the time this show is podcast, there will be a hearing at the Corporation Commission
That's
on
right.
the health here, public health concerns about the negative health effects many people are experiencing since the installation of an electronic smart meter on their home.
That's right.
Some people are hypersensitive to the EMF radiation.
And it seems to be creating some hypersensitivity amongst those that didn't know they had it before, too.
You're right, amongst those who didn't have it at all.
Exactly.
So, become aware of that. And Don, you're associated with a couple of groups and
I
websites.
I am very involved with the Tulsa 912 Project, and we have a website simply called Tulsa912Project.com. One of the activities we just completed on Saturday was a very successful symposium called Understanding Common Core. We had about 165 folks there, came literally from all over this state, and I even met one guy standing in line for lunch that came over from Arizona for it.
There was a lady from Kansas.
That's right. There were people from Kansas as well. We had one of the most impressive assortments of speakers that you'll find anywhere on that subject in the country. I've been looking at other activities going on in Florida and Texas and Kansas and Missouri, and there are a lot of symposiums and town halls and conferences coming up about Common Core. It's starting to percolate up as a very, very hot subject, but none of them set aside a whole day, got the state superintendent of education to come as a primary speaker and explain what she thinks they were accomplishing, and some of the other speakers that we had. It was really excellent, and all of that information is going to be available shortly on YouTube. So if you're interested and weren't able to attend, by going to the website that I just mentioned, Tulsa912Project.com, shortly you'll be given links to it.
The intent of that public forum, from what I understand, and I did attend, we had an OK Safe table present there, was to hear both sides of the issue.
Exactly.
And I will say, Don, sitting through that entire conference on that public forum, is that the proponents of Common Core were ill-informed.
Well said. There's an old joke, I think it goes back to Abraham Lincoln, about a guy coming to a battle of wits unarmed. And that's kind of the way it felt to us. They were expected to present all of the reasons why you'd really want Common Core, and instead they were basically giving campaign speeches or platitudes, and some of those platitudes were absolutely diametrically opposed to the truth of Common Core. So, I think even an entity as questionable in its bona fides as Tulsa World made a comment about it that the superintendent was being schooled by the audience, and I think that's kind of the way it came across.
She was campaigning, and she is campaigning because she's running for re-election, and had to be reminded that people had paid money to hear about the Common Core
right.
curriculum standards.
Twice. And another website that I'm involved with is boondoggleblog.com, and that's one that I spawned under the Tulsa 912 Project to identify and publish outrageous, egregious, and stunning wastes of public money.
When I was listening to, that's a good website, by the way, and lots of fodder for that canon, too. When I was observing the people who were the advocates for it, I came away with this sense that they had only read the outside of the cereal box and had never opened it up to see if the contents were exactly what was advertised on the outside. And they wanted people to be happy with their description of it. It says it's healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't read on the inside. It's like, no, this is garbage in
here. I couldn't agree more. And they seemed actually stunned and even argumentative about the truths when they were exposed by various members
of
the...
One of them did not even want to take the time to find out the truth.
That's true, yeah.
But Brian Hunt will remain there. Nameless. Okay.
Your questioning of Brian Hunt is something that everybody ought to listen to if you didn't get to hear it. I was reminded of Raymond Burr in a Perry Mason episode or something.
You don't have any factual knowledge, actually. Anyway, that was a fun little exchange there. We are delighted. We're going to get to our show here eventually, Don. We are delighted today to have a special in-studio guest. It's Representative Dave Brumbaugh from House District 76 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Representing, it's part of Tulsa,
Broken Arrow,
Oklahoma. And before we get to him, real quick, we've got a couple of announcements.
One big
one for the state of Oklahoma is that District Judge Ronald White from the U.S. District Court of the Eastern District of Oklahoma in Muskogee has rendered a decision that he has denied the federal government's motion to dismiss the lawsuit filed by our state against the Affordable Care Act.
Right. Just quick background. We did not join. Oklahoma did not join the lawsuit that 22 or 24 or something other states filed that has already been adjudicated. We filed, however, a totally separate, independent lawsuit, and that's what this action is.
It is. And Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt said the judge's ruling was a first stage victory in the state's battle against the law. He goes on and says, the court rejected the federal government's argument that Oklahoma lacked standing to challenge the law, allowing us to proceed with this pivotal case, Pruitt said. All right, so now that's one good news. And then the other thing we found out from our guest today is that the Oklahoma legislature will convene a special session, and it will be convened on September 2nd. Is that a Monday?
Yes, that's... We start September 2nd, and I believe that is a Monday, yeah.
All right, on September 2nd in 2013, we're in the interim. They're not supposed to be back at work, and yet special session has been called, and we won't get into it, but hopefully, I don't think it's going to be a single subject session. They're going to be considering what to do about Insure Oklahoma, I'm pretty sure.
Probably.
Instead of the Supreme Court's rejection of some lawsuit reform.
Right.
All right. Representative Brumbaugh, we're delighted that you're here today.
It's great to be with you.
We're going to be discussing with you today the impact and consequences of tax credits for low-income housing, a.k.a. the Affordable Housing Act that was recently attempted to pass in the state of Oklahoma. Also, some in the state legislature want to expand Medicaid and somehow continue Insure Oklahoma, contrary to what most people want. And that was we know that that's contrary because of a recent survey by Magellan Services. And Representative Brumbaugh, you were part of a conference call on that very survey, weren't you, a few weeks ago? So
yes.
Was I. And let's discuss that right off the bat.
Okay, yeah.
Well, first off, tell us how long you've been a legislator in your district.
Well, this is my second session, and I represent Broken Arrow on a small swath of Tulsa, about 200 houses, actually. And it's been a great, great experience. We have just great people here in Broken Arrow, and I'm really proud to represent them.
And there are about 35,000 homes?
Right around 39,000.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're pretty conservative here, and a lot of family values, so it's great serving and representing.
Just to toot Representative Brumbaugh's horn for a second, because I wouldn't expect him to bring this up, but in a recent analysis of voting records by legislators, I'm delighted and proud to know that my friend Dave Brumbaugh ranks top in the House.
He got 100.
He did.
Congratulations.
Well, I wish my mother and father would give me something for that A, but...
But thank you. Thank you.
You're
thank
quite
you for,
welcome.
For it's, your it's consistent my voting record on behalf of us.
Yes, it's
we
my pleasure.
We expect nothing less.
There you go.
Well, because everybody knows where you live.
A lot of us don't expect anything, but yeah. That's a different story.
It is. Listen, Representative Brumbaugh, Dave, we have had some very interesting conversations, you and I, about the low-income housing tax credit. Now, we opposed that. OK Safe opposed it, and a lot of grassroots people did, particularly when we did a little bit of investigation. And mm-hmm. Now, Don, the bill we're talking about, remember we had a radio show on it, was Senate Bill 804 by Mike Jackson and Bryce Marlatt, who just happened to get campaign contributions from a builder who would benefit from the passage of the Low-Income Housing or Affordable Housing Act.
Pure coincidence, as we concluded earlier.
It must be. It must be. And it's, you know, coincidence that this same builder has done this same thing in Missouri. And has a track record a mile long on tweaking the system here. And then you debated against this bill, and you've done a great deal of research on what the real facts are about low-income housing.
And it's even worse than we thought, isn't it?
Well, the acronym is called LIHTC, and I think that's appropriate. Most of these investors, Amanda and Don, are corporations. And
first off, let's tell, what is low-income housing?
Low-income housing is a combination of tax credits and advantages from the federal government as far as low interest loans that are below market rate, and it allows these developers and equity partners, usually investors or banks, to get advantages and a return on investment that normal people just don't get.
Normal builders.
Yes.
A regular builder.
Yes.
Do these low-income housing areas or developments include Section 8 housing?
It does also, but what they do is they underwrite the building costs with tax credits and subsidized loans.
They being the government?
Yes, and the states are now, since the government doesn't have a lot of money, as we know since 2008,
we've noticed,
are becoming the piggy banks for these developers. And what happens is they reap the profits from these development fees and sale of tax credits that they receive. They usually, and in this case, this developer has a track record of receiving about 15% of his project cost on top of what he's paid. So he can charge that, and then they also sell the tax credits at the end. So
the developer can sell the tax credits?
That's correct.
So these are transferable tax credits, and the law says they can do that?
Yes, yes. The portion that, it's a big windfall. Even the Attorney General in Missouri is checking into why these firms pay less than others do.
When we think of low-income housing, a lot of minds would go to rather inexpensively constructed projects.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about here.
No,
is
no.
It?
In fact, you're talking about Section 8 housing and whatnot, Don. Somewhere in, I believe it was a Columbia paper, they were saying that where one Section 8 housing developer might get $70 a square foot, these are getting $294 a square foot.
And wow. What kind of housing developments are they doing? Retirement communities?
Exactly, exactly. Wouldn't you want your aging parents to move into some Wyndham or luxury type housing complex?
Four Seasons.
Yeah, you can pay $400 a month, $500 a month, and you have a guaranteed clientele. You have a return on investment easily, and that's what happens. And they can jack up their building cost and things such as this too.
Is there any kind of oversight of the low-income housing developments?
Well, they do have underwriters for the loans, but they never catch it. They never catch what's going on. The developers managing, some of these developers are managing the housing developments afterwards, after they get up and running, and they repackage these credits.
So you build it and you sell it and you manage it.
And then the credits you've gotten to supplement your cost, your building cost.
You liquidate those.
Yeah, and you sell them, and the underwriters never catch it. So what actually paid for the project, and sometimes we lose sight of this, is taxpayer dollars, because their costs for building it are lower than what the taxpayers are on the foot for. Sometimes they do that 10 years. And what the public seems to miss, Amanda and Don, is that low-income housing tax credits account for a loss of $61 billion of tax revenue.
Wow. $61 billion?
And here's this is not
now
me.
Now, this is at the federal level.
Yeah, this is not me saying. It's the President's Economic Recovery Advisory Board.
Wow.
Obama's own board says, you know, we're losing $61 billion in revenue. And we can't do that right now. We don't have the money at a time when state budgets are struggling.
So is a low-income tax credit is a federal initiative that particular builders qualify to secure. Mm-hmm. Now, what the Affordable Care Act, creating the Affordable Care, Affordable Housing Act in Oklahoma, Senate Bill 804, is proposing is to create a parallel program in the state of Oklahoma.
Exactly.
Is that correct? Or
yes.
One, and that the state of Oklahoma would also issue a tax credit.
Exactly. And there were people on the floor that stood up and say, well, are you talking about transferable tax credits here? You know, and I made the statement, if you're not bringing jobs and you're not creating wealth for Oklahoma and you're taking outside of state like you are here, and you come in, you're the only one benefiting from this, why should we be issuing tax credits to you?
When you're saying transferable tax credits, we opposed Senate Bill 804 and began to look into this particular builder from Missouri, Jeffrey E. Smith. He has Jeffrey E. Smith Holdings and Equity Partners. He's American Equity Partners. He does everything, you know, including the management of the properties afterward. But looking around on who his board members are, the advisory board and other board members, now just keep in mind, in the back of your mind, there's transferable tax credits. Well, one of these men is from Brazil.
Yeah.
So how far can these transfer?
I don't know. What's down below Brazil? Maybe the South Pole or something? I don't. You know, Amanda,
what's to keep a Brazilian operating in the United States from actually be the recipient of the tax transfer?
Well, that's not the only thing here.
Nothing against Brazilians.
Yeah, these developers also get subsidies. They get development grants. They get loans at below market interest rates. It's about a third of their cost just for those things. And then you take into account all the other items and guaranteed tenants. I mean,
right.
Up to 70% return on investment immediately after with tax credits, deductions.
Wow.
And then you're syndicating these credits to investors in exchange for being allocated in the mix over a 10-year period. Everyone in this situation makes money except the taxpayers.
Exactly.
Who builds the product? Who builds the homes? they subcontract that out?
Well, that gentleman you just spoke of in Missouri, he's got his all his builders in there, and he can charge, you know, the cost he needs to charge.
I have a correction. He wasn't from Brazil. He's from Mexico.
Oh, okay.
He's from
totally different.
Elliot Bross,
totally different.
General Director and Partner, Plan Grupo from Mexico.
But, you know, as our population ages and you've got older people on fixed income, wouldn't you want your parent in at $400 a month into one of these nice apartments and nice living communities? But that's great. But who's on the foot for this? Who's
taxpayers.
On the bill? The
in
taxpayers.
Fact, that reminds me of another battle that we're still fighting here in the Tulsa area of a upscale retirement facility that has had tax shelter for property taxes has had tax sheltered status for a long time, and that's being fought now, and I think will probably be defeated, and it's just wrong for the taxpayers to subsidize that way.
What this is reminding me of when you're saying you're anticipating, you know, this obviously, since they're focusing in on retirement communities and assisted living facilities and those kinds of nursing homes and that kind of thing, that a beautiful, safe environment for mom. This is reminds me of what the insurance industry is looking at with the 70 million baby boomers coming into the insurance marketplace, going to make claims, and those people, the like the Aetnas of the world, yep, and United Healthcare, have their exit strategy. They're going to move into, for instance, maybe reinsurance and adopt another kind of model. So this guy is anticipating that this effort is anticipating this as well, and this is their exit strategy or survival strategy or way to capitalize on it. What's common to both of them, who is taking care of the who's underwriting it is us, the taxpayer. They're profiting. The taxpayer is supporting it. So that's that phrase we were just discussing before, yeah, we started tonight, that it's socializing the profit, the expenses,
losses, yeah,
and privatizing the profits.
Right, right.
You know what it reminds me of, Amanda?
What?
Loan shark on the corner giving out $5 and taking back in $2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're going to foot the bill for all this, and these investors and these equity developers and whatnot form C corporations, where else do you get 70% return on your investment? Do you get it in the stock market?
Nowhere.
Today?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. And this is anti-free enterprise because there can't be another builder who maybe would like to build, right, some affordable homes, is not part of this little closed network,
right,
and he can't compete with this.
Oh, absolutely not. It just destroys the free market system. You're talking about $9.2 million in the first year and $4.6 million in the second year that Oklahoma would be on the, you know, account for.
Our budget's already loaded. Oh, loaded.
Yeah, that's right.
No, you know, you just can't continue to come to this state and suck out all the money that we taxpayers have worked hard for. Listen, even if it wasn't affordable housing for retirees and people on low-income housing has never helped eliminate the poverty problem in the United States.
Never has. That's,
yeah,
right.
You had some statistics on that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it looks like we are in the market now for across the country, you know, some $200 billion. $200 billion that is being invested in low-income housing, and there's no return. There is, if you look at low-income housing and you look at how long those houses are up for, it looks like the top rate is 7 years. In some places, it's less than that. So, you know, what are you getting out of that?
That's amazing. Yeah, and you can't spin poverty into wealth, can you?
No. And this is all about special interest here.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, it is corporate welfare. And, you know, when we
So your suggestion is to let the free market, if there is a true need for low-income housing, let builders build low-income housing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If If the free market cannot do it, why are we giving special concessions to folks that just, you know?
Well, one thing you and I would both, I think, quickly agree, Dave, is that if you went into the free market, it wouldn't cost you $300 a square foot to build hardly anything.
No, it wouldn't. And, you know, Thessalonians says, neither shall a man work, neither shall he eat.
That's right.
We just need to stop making trapping families in intergenerational poverty. It's gone on for years.
Yes.
And, yes, I want to take care of my mother. I want to take care of my father. I want to...
That's biblical.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Have good housing for them, but
right.
I don't need to do it on the backs of other people.
Well said.
All right. So your recommendation, Senate Bill 804 has been laid over, and it's still alive. It failed in the House, and so the author laid it over until the beginning of next session. Could this bill come up in a special session?
I have no idea at this point, Amanda.
All right. Well, that's the music indicating the end of the first half. That was very fast music. We have first half of America in the Balance. Our special guest today is Representative Dave Brumbaugh. That's a little better. And we're going to take a short musical interlude, and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here as always. By the way, thanks for picking that. That came out in late 65 and early 66, and I remember it well. I really enjoyed the
did
music.
Did you try to sing along, hit the high notes there? I did. I remember that. I love that song.
Yeah.
And our special guest is Representative Dave Brumbaugh from House District 76, covering Broken Arrow and Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And, great to be here with you.
So we went from the Vogues to Ted Nugent right at the bottom of the hour, which is great.
A little switch.
There is. But no MC Hammer.
There you yet.
Ted Nugent is more Meyer than the Vogues.
There you go.
Ah. Just another reminder, we're getting old, Don.
Yes. Yeah, I'm old, that's for
I
sure.
I am, too.
I'm older than dirt, and everybody knows it.
You're doing great. special baby boomer, you'll be working till you die.
Thank you.
That's yes, I did. Yes. I read that somewhere.
Glad to be part of that world.
We are. We are going to move from affordable housing, and by the way, we're going to vote no on Senate Bill 804 when it becomes when it comes up again, and that's the creating the Affordable Housing Act for Oklahoma. Our recommendation would still be to vote no. I'm pretty sure that would be Representative Brumbaugh's recommendation as well. Thank you very much.
We probably want to change its name to Unaffordable Housing, huh?
Yes. Unaffordable.
Kind of like we did with the Unaffordable Care Act.
We just call it LIHTC.
I like that.
LIHTC. Well, we're moving into another lie kind of thing. There's talk, Representative Brumbaugh, to expand Medicaid. There are rumblings out there that there are people in the state of Oklahoma want to expand Medicaid. Governor Fallon responded to the many, many calls, like 3,000 calls, in the clear indication that the state of Oklahoma, the people don't want to expand Medicaid, or at least her base in the middle do not want to expand Medicaid. We can't afford it. The Oklahoma Healthcare Authority paid something like $250,000 to Levitt Partners, Inc. out of Utah to examine what SoonerCare is doing and how they might move forward and what do they recommend. Did you see the Levitt Partners report?
I did.
Bottom line, would it be fair to say they basically said expand Medicaid and use the Insure Oklahoma infrastructure?
As the vehicle, yes.
As the vehicle. Yeah. Existing. Now, Insure Oklahoma is what?
Well, it is supposed to be for low-income Oklahomans, similar to Medicaid on the federal level.
Working in Oklahomans.
Yes, working Oklahomans. And there's a requirement, obviously an income requirement, but everybody seems to want to use whatever vehicle they can to implement Obamacare. And in Oklahoma, we have just said no to that, just like Nancy Reagan told us about drugs. You know, the issue has been voted on by the people. State Question 756, as you guys remember, we received a 65% vote that Oklahomans feel like it's unconstitutional to mandate to purchase health insurance. In fact, it's illegal, and we need to follow what the people are saying.
Well said.
Have you heard discussions to that by some in the legislature? You don't have to name names unless you would really want to, but who say that we should consider expanding Medicaid?
Well, I hear all the different sides of the issue. In fact, we were on a conference call the other day, and I think you attended one of those.
Yes.
Amanda. And I listened to a legislator talking about what do I need to do to the people in my district, and she's from a that legislator's from a rural district. And I said, well, just explain what Medicare is going to do to the state and this country, and you'd be surprised how I'm not talking about this person, but how many people are ill-informed about what's coming down the pike and need to get up to speed on what's going on.
What is going on? Well, what is coming down the pike?
Well, the feds are going to try to cough up about $900 billion of your tax dollars over the next 8 years, almost $1 trillion, to pay for this program. I'm very proud of our Attorney General, Scott Pruitt, getting out there. And maybe you can talk to the listeners, Amanda, about what came down, because the U.S. Supreme Court upheld although we were disappointed in their ruling that Obamacare was legal, they upheld the governor's right to not expand Medicaid in the states. And right. Scott has been fighting for that.
He did. I'll read from the it was a lawsuit that was filed. And our challenge, the Oklahoma challenge, I'll read what it says here. Oklahoma challenged implementation of the Affordable Care Act after the IRS finalized a rule that would allow the federal government to punish, quote, large employers, and the state of Oklahoma is a large employer, including local government, with millions of dollars in tax penalties in states without state health care exchanges, which is not allowed under the health care law. And as our listeners know, we did not establish a state-based exchange, and the penalty could only be applied through a state-based exchange, according to the law. Congress provided a choice for Oklahoma and other states in implementation of the health care law, and the IRS is attempting to take that away by rule. The administration miscalculated how many states would support this law, so now they're using the IRS to push through provisions that Congress did not pass.
Right.
So what they're saying is that, now I was there when the U.S. Department of Justice attorney, I was in the courtroom when the Justice attorney represented the U.S. Department of Justice was there pleading their case, calling for a dismissal of the Oklahoma challenge, saying that we did not have standing and we're not qualified to make this charge or issue this challenge. And
if you go by the Supreme Court decision, we do have standing.
Absolutely.
And the fact of the matter is the IRS is attempting to spend tax dollars and levy taxes without the authorization of Congress.
What they were saying was if the judge had bought that argument, then the government itself had taken both sides.
Yes.
That's right.
You can't pick a side. Which position is it? The states don't have to build an exchange, and the only way the penalty would be applied would be through an exchange, and you just affirmed that that was true, and then they wanted to make an exception because they didn't catch it early enough.
Well, we were only one state in that case, and so that's the defense that the Justice Department chose to use. But the irony to me is that just in the last couple of days, we've learned that the IRS itself is seeking exemption from Obamacare, and I'm trying to figure out what sense this makes.
Didn't Tom Coburn agree that the everybody wants an exception?
Yep. Yeah, it's just like saying you're for Common Core, but you're for school choice.
There you go.
You know, 34 states have refused to create exchanges,
they were hoping it'd be maybe one or two, I'm guessing.
Right. And, you know, when we're talking about raising this to 400% of the poverty level, you're talking about $94,000 that has to go out for a family of four.
A year?
Yes. And it's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. Now, let me back up. I don't know if that's for a year, but that was one of the numbers I got. And that... What happens is this carrot of federal subsidies. This is the addiction. You know that.
That 9,400 number that you just now quoted, I have also seen a number that's closer to 15,000 is the estimate for a family.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think that number's, it may be low, if anything.
Yes, yes.
Because you have to work, if your employer sponsors the insurance, your employer then is extracting from you the labor to make back his portion.
Of course.
So in essence, it is costing $15,000, even though you think
don't see it as a deduction on your pay stub, but it's there.
Well, why wouldn't you have layoffs in this difficult time if you've got to incur those expenses?
Or at least dramatic cutbacks
in
hours and staff.
Look at what's happened with the employment. It's all part-time jobs now because everybody's looking at this situation.
Two-thirds of the new jobs, such as they are, were part-time jobs.
Exactly.
And I read a statistic, you probably saw the same thing. Only 47% of working Americans today have a full-time job.
Absolutely.
So 53% do not. This is just, where's all this money supposed to come from?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we're spending $50 million now in Medicaid and CHIP, that's the Children's Health Insurance.
Right.
We're going to be spending $90 million by the end of the decade. Cost have gone up 250% since 1990. What we've got here is we're going to be into a situation where able-bodied 25-year-olds are going to be competing with the sick and poor. Think about that. Think about that from, let's forget about the money. This is how rationing starts.
That's right.
It was supposed to be a safety net for the sick and the poor, but why would you accept somebody who's sick and poor as opposed to a healthy, well-bodied 25-year-old? The poor and the sick are going to lose out in this situation, and this is what it was meant to help. I guess people don't get it. You know, they don't get the circular reasoning here.
Because the media and all of the talking points are this, is that we have these people who are uninsured. We have these uninsured people in the mindset is that it's about insurance generates into good health care. That is not the case.
Well, we heard stories during the arguments about passage about people dying in the sidewalks in front of hospitals because they couldn't get health care, and that turned out to be absolutely untrue. And most of the other hyperbole arguments.
Don makes a good point here. Don't the uninsured already have access to health care for free in the emergency room?
Absolutely.
Prenatal care, clinics, health department. Yeah. That's the Emergency Medical Treatment Active Labor Act.
Exactly.
Yeah,
because
you're right,
Tom. Is about getting them into the insurance marketplace. This whole thing is about getting people enrolled into the insurance marketplace. So the discussion has been framed to be about insurance instead of about health care.
And you and I would argue that it's probably not even so much about insurance. It's about getting them into the database. I think that's what they're really about.
Well, to distribute the risk, because then you know how well somebody is and you can distribute it. So no one insurance company gets more heavily burdened with sick people than another.
The president wants to put 1 in 4 Americans into Medicaid.
That's right.
And their costs have grown 7.2% annually. State tax revenues only up 3.9%. How do we sustain this? Cost will go up $23 billion over the next 5 years. And you know why costs have gone up? Amanda makes a good argument, too, about people saying, well, we have to insure everybody. It's about uninsured, and it's about this. Well, everybody makes the, I hear from the hospitals, our medical costs have gone up. All these things have gone up. Why have they gone up? Because of the higher enrollment and the caseload. It's not the other factors.
Well, that's only part of the story. We learned from our guest, Dr. Keith Smith, a couple of weeks ago, and I encourage the listeners to go back and listen to this if you haven't already, that those costs are rather arbitrary, that they had to realign the costs in order to report correctly, and you just need to listen to the story.
They have to report a loss.
Yeah,
they report losses and
take losses even though they're making significant profits. So it's an accounting gimmick in large part.
He said all those hospitals that this is Dr. Keith Smith speaking, saying that all those hospitals that say that they're having a loss or they're nonprofit all have cranes out front.
That's right.
Building and expanding. Yeah.
And they can't figure out where to spend the money fast enough.
I have on this issue of healthcare and this enrollment, what I see, and I don't know this for fact, I'm just beginning to explore this, because I asked the question, what comes next? Insurance companies, for the most part, the larger ones, had a great hand in crafting the legislation of the Affordable Care Act. They saw 70 million people, 70 million claims coming their way with the aging baby boomer. That population's coming their way. That means more payouts. What could they do to survive as a company and thrive and profit on this? So I see this as kind of a scheme that has worked out where the government becomes the insurer. And I read one account. I was looking, what is the future of the insurance? What comes after this? All right, in a couple of years, everybody's enrolled. Now what? The future of insurance. This is an article I found on governing.com called The Future of Insurance in an Era of Healthcare Reform.
Go read it for sure.
Go read it. It's on governing.com's website, The Future of Insurance in an Era of Healthcare Reform. It's an article where the interviewee is the CEO of Aetna Insurance, a 160-year-old insurance company. And the premise is nobody knows exactly what the health reform law, along with the relentless rise in healthcare costs, will do to the insurance industry and to insurance premiums. This Aetna CEO, of course, Mark Bertoloni, is the interviewee. Aetna enrolls 40 million people in its medical, dental, and pharmacy plans. They generate more than $30 billion in insurance premiums. And he says, the question is, what do you think healthcare system of the future will look like? And if we had to start over again, Bertoloni is saying, we would design the healthcare system to meet the capacity needs of the community it's serving, by understanding the demographics, the disease burden, and the economic and environmental trends of the local community. And he goes on further to say, based on these inputs, what they would be engaged in is population health management. So the insurance world, in his vision, would change into a population health management system. And it goes on to describe how they would do that.
And already are.
And already are in Benhai, China, which is Silicon Valley out there. They're already setting up this prototype. It says, what role does an insurance company like Aetna play in the community health system? This is in the future. What would it look like? First, we have the data to understand how the system should be constructed. An insurance company is the one organization in the healthcare system today that actually sees everything that happens because we get all the claims. Second, we have the technology that supports the gathering of the information and the data. And last, we have the financing capability to make sure that the investment is well handled. So what he's saying is that think of an insurance company in this new world, this is their new vision, is a highly specialized bank.
That's what he says.
And they're going to move into the reinsurance marketplace.
It sounds like the first hour, doesn't it? A little bit.
Again.
They're going to move into
what? Corporate welfare?
That's it.
It is corporate welfare. It's socializing the costs and privatizing the profits. What we do is provide financing, risk management, and reinsurance coverage. So reinsurance means we insure the insurer. Who's the new insurer? The government.
Exactly.
The government. And so they're testing this model. They're going to move to an intelligence model, share their intellectual property with the providers. This is what an accountable care organization looks like. Yeah. And they're backing out of this. This is now the state's the insurer, the government's the insurer.
Yeah.
They're the reinsurer, just like Berkshire Hathaway.
But who's paying for it? It's the states. Aetna, Cigna, Humana, United Healthcare, Blue Cross. And here's the thing that's lost on all this. And I hear so much disingenuous comments, you know, both from all the groups in the legislature and everything else. Medicaid has had no upgrade since 1965. The music that you were talking about is actually older than the upgrade.
When you say upgrade, you mean the technology systems?
No, there's been no cost controls, no reforms, nothing to the system that has been upgraded since that time as far as the delivery.
Been on autopilot.
It has been on autopilot since that time. It's a broken system.
Well, maybe
even the president says that.
Well, maybe that's what this Aetna CEO is talking about when they're going to share their intellectual property and the infrastructure and the insurance. This is a huge public-private partnership.
Feels that way. When you read this article, it's especially troubling because he just accepts as a given that they have the right to run the society, and that's just strange to me.
Well, and again, it's the same thing. They're dangling that carrot in front of the states and saying, "Move! You know, you're already at 138% of the poverty line with your Medicaid. It's across the nation. It's 24% of budgets,
yep.
And in some states, it's bankrupting the states and." We're going to give you a little 100% match for a few years, and then you're going to hold the ball. And where's that match coming from? Again, the taxpayers.
There you go.
Which is getting more and more broke.
Yep.
It's like.
Yeah, the taxpayers that are no longer working.
Empty pockets.
That's right. That's exactly right, and that's why the costs have gone up. I mean, you know, it's a vicious cycle, isn't it?
A spiral. It's a deepening spiral.
We say we believe in free markets. We say we believe in limited government. We say we believe in federalism and individual liberty. This is the biggest attack on individual liberty, biblical principle that started in the garden with freedom of choice.
That's right.
And all the way through, I've never seen such an attack on individual liberty in our country's history as this.
Well said.
It needs to just crumble. And we had a guest on last week, Jonathan Bartlett, right. Wrote a little book called Micro Secession, How to Liberate Yourself, Your Family, Yourself, and Your Community from Government Idiocy.
Right. Great book.
I know. And it's short.
It's brief.
It's pretty brief. And it's a work in progress, but we're all trying to figure out how we can live and thrive and not give our money, our hard-earned money, and spend our treasure into this system that's broken. Starve that beast and create an alternative
system. Starve
the
plant and it will not grow. You're exactly right, Amanda.
So we need to have these alternative methods, whether it comes down to barter, exchanging service for product,
silver.
Whatever it is, silver, whatever it is, we need to extract ourselves from this beast, which is going to sink us, and will sink, and just take our money and go elsewhere.
My grandfather, and I used to go on house calls with him when he had a hospital up in the Slate Belt of Pennsylvania, and he used to pull the quarry guys out, and he delivered all the babies around there, and everybody knew him. And he was just common sense guy. He said the health insurance and the doctors are going to destroy this industry.
Wow.
And he died in 82, but he is a prophet on these things. He really
saw
is.
Saw it as it was.
And man, I appreciate you guys. I got to tell you, Amanda and Don, without these state-based exchanges, the federal government can't function. They can't tax and put subsidies and whatnot. So we have to stop the state-based exchanges.
We said from the beginning, when we looked at the early innovator grant and examined that and what its complexities were and why they gave the early innovator grant was because they couldn't build it. They needed the states to work it all out, figure it out, pilot projects, and then use it as a best practice and let the other states adopt it. If for a state, its strongest position, if they were sincere in opposing Obamacare, do not build a state-based exchange, because if you don't build it, they can't do it. It's too complicated.
Speaking
of appropriate political philosophy, one thing really troubling, it's just a pet peeve of mine, in this article that we've already mentioned with the Aetna CEO, he refers to our political system here as, quote, a laboratory for democracy. I am tired of people not understanding that this is a republic.
Yes. Well, if it's a democracy, you know, here's a democracy, there's a democracy. It's all a global business world.
That's right. That's right.
You're just not very global.
Not global enough.
But aren't you looking at either? China has watched the developing nations. Anyway, so they're moving over to Benhai, China. This just tells you that one insurance plan and infrastructure will work anywhere in the world. And then they're going to bring it back to the United States and try it here. That's
I'm looking forward to that, aren't you?
The hope is that the projects we're doing in China, technology-based, intellectual property transfer, giving up the rights to having it be agnostic to the payer system, are things providers can use for any payer anywhere in the world.
Yep.
Rips and Brumbaugh, we're coming to the bottom of this hour. Do you have anything to wrap us up with?
Well, I would just
wrap up the show.
Yeah, I would just say for the state of Oklahoma to continue on the path we're going down, we need to just say no to the federal government, and we need to stop any state-based exchanges. Let's continue the fight that Scott Pruitt is taking up in the Supreme Court, and we can decide our own outcomes in this state and stop the spending. Just say no.
Just say no. And don't expand Medicaid.
No.
Vote no on Senate Bill 804.
Absolutely.
Right.
And where?
Yeah. Stop Common Core.
Stop Common Core.
We got a lot of things to stop.
Basically, leave
us
alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Just leave us alone. We're doing fine in Oklahoma.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh,
David.
It's my pleasure, guys. It really is. Thank you.
You're a delight. We'll have to have you back again.
Okay.
And
I look forward to it.
All right.
Maybe we can get a briefing from you from the special session after it's over.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
That would be great. I'd be delighted to know what happens there.
Yeah, I would be too.
All right. Well, this has been America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. I'm Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt. Our special guest today, Representative Dave Brumbaugh. We appreciate your listening and your patience. Please check out the other podcasts of related items, especially the interview with Dr.
Keith Smith.
Keith Smith. Go back there and listen to that. May God bless you.